Cars, start your engines!
Hit the pace car! What for? Because you hit every other damn thing out there, I want you to be perfect!
When I'm driving, I got a guy on the radio who talks to me. It's him. He talks to me.
He didn't slam you, he didn't bump you, he didn't nudge you, he rubbed you. And rubbing's son is racing.
Hey, race fans, welcome to the Hoobazoo Radio Network and welcome to the Drafting the Circuits radio program. My name is Frank Santoroski. I'll be your host for the next hour as we talk about this past weekend in racing and preview next week. Joining me in the studio this week are Mr. Gray Warren, Mr. Seth Eggert, and Mr. Richard Uden. Fellas, how we doing tonight?
Terrific.
Good. Yourself?
Oh, I'm doing great because I'm a big IndyCar guy, and we had a big IndyCar race that was a really fantastic event at Gateway, or Worldwide Technology Speedway, as it's known this day and age. Takuma Sato took home the win after being vilified in the press after the events at Pocono. In other news, the NASCAR, the Cup Series had the week off, but the trucks were up in Canada. Brett Moffitt took the win out there at the Canadian Tire Park, and Christopher Bell took the Xfinity win at Road America. So two great road courses for the Junior Series in NASCAR, and a very exciting oval race for the IndyCar Series. So let's talk about the Gateway race for IndyCar. This event, the first year they had it, it was very successful, and it's only grown. It's only grown from there. They had, matter of fact, sold out most of the grandstands available for seating, opened up turn one, sold another 11,000 tickets, essentially to a corporation looking to buy 11,000 corporate tickets, which was, you know, it's all good and well. I mean, they put 11,000 more people in the stands. As this race gets underway, it's under the lights. It's very exciting. The same characters from the initial Pocono wreck, being Sato, Hunter Ray, Rossi, almost get bottled up first turn of this race. Everyone gets away cleanly, and the race goes on. Penske cars are solid up front. Santino Ferrucci leads the most laps on the day. And here's a kid who we've talked about, you know, time and again on the air. Our colleague Joey, who's not here with us tonight, is not quite sold on Santino, as we talked about last week. But, man, the kid looked really good this week, worked his way through the front. Sebastian Bourdais, his Dale Coyne teammate, also running right there at the front. Looked like we may actually end up with a Dale Coyne 1-2 for a while, until Sebastian had a little problem, got up a little high in the marbles, hit the wall, ended his day early. Santino remained strong. A caution at the through the pit stops there allowed Takuma Sato, Ed Carpenter, Tony Kanaan, who hadn't pitted yet, up the front, and we kind of ended that way with those guys up front. Now, for Takuma, he had a fast car all night. You can't say the whole thing was based on, you know, luck or strategy. But the strategy was correct, and the luck was fell his way. And it's so interesting, Richard. You and I were talking. The on a road course, if the caution comes out after the other guys have pitted, you go straight to the back. On a short oval like this, just a little tick over a mile, 1.25 miles. If the other guys have pitted and then the caution comes out, you're in the catbird seat, because those guys are now lapped down and you're pitting under yellow, and you go right back to the front, and that benefited Takuma, Tony, Ed. So good job to all of them. Rossi, who's looking to win a championship had the strategy all wrong. He stayed out on an earlier caution, trying to stretch the fuel. Turned out to be the absolute worst decision of the weekend, and he ended up mired back in the field, lapped down towards the end. He couldn't stretch the fuel, had to make a late pit stop. Newgarden looking to capitalize, Simon Pagenaud was ahead of Newgarden. He's looking to gain some spots. Right on the last lap there, we had Santino Ferrucci get a little high up into the marbles and come back into the racing line right in front of Joseph Newgarden. Newgarden goes down, hits the curb, spins, loses 8 spots on the last lap. But he still gains points in a championship. This is one of the luckiest guys in the world. But the long and short of it is Pagenaud leapfrogs over Rossi for second spot in the championship, and Joseph extends his lead. Now, Richard Gray, Seth, did any of you guys get a chance to watch this race? Because it was a really good show.
Yeah, it was a good show.
It's It's interesting how it's sort of picking up. This is the second, third year they've had that race there now.
Third,
yeah. It seems to be one of those events that's going from strength to strength. And the whole city, in a way, sort of being a bit rejuvenated, isn't it? They lost the Rams a few years ago, but they've just signed an MLS contract, and they're really sort of starting to pick up with their the IndyCar program.
And the Cardinals are in first place.
Yeah, exactly. So they're it's great. I'm really pleased. It's a beautiful city. If you get a chance to go over there, it's a great place to visit, and it's great that the racing's so good around that little unique little circuit there.
And that auto group, the Bomarito Auto Group, has really gotten behind it, and that always helps when you have a strong sponsor that will underwrite the event and help with it. And when they can do that, and it gets it helps with marketing, helps the track with marketing and marketing in the area. And when you can do that, you got the race out front in front of people, and you're going to get a good gate.
Yeah, and on top of that, the rest of the city has kind of gathered around this event. They had on Thursday night, they had an IndyCar night at the Busch Stadium, the ballpark for the Cardinals. They had several show cars out there. They had a little IndyCar fan fest, and then they had Joseph Newgarden throw out the first pitch for the game. On top of that, they had the hockey players from the St. Louis Blues, who have just won a Stanley Cup. They're at the race with the Stanley Cup, and there's so much really nice cross promotion in there. And when you see that after 3 years, the crowd has grown rather than waned off. And oddly enough, if you look at the quality of racing, it is processional at times during the middle portions of this race. But they have gotten lucky. I don't want to say lucky, but each race has had a pretty exciting finish when you go back to the first one where, Newgarden came down low almost into the grass to nip Simon at the end. And then this race here with Sato winning, they've really been blessed, I guess, with an awesome race. A lot of the talk now is like, why don't we make this our finale?
You go back and think, they've got a textbook for marketing and putting on the race. They've got the community involved in it. They've got whoever is the group that does it is spot on, knows what they're doing. And other tracks like Phoenix and some of these other tracks should take note of what they're doing.
NASCAR in general.
Yeah, well, just doing it and promoting the race. You've got to promote it and get out front. You can't leave it up to IndyCar to do it. IndyCar's not going to do it.
The only other track that I can think of that compares with what Gateway has done with its rejuvenation in recent years, I'd almost have to go and point at Darlington Raceway.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Especially with the throwback weekend.
And yeah, And it shows that the turnstiles, Darlington will be almost at capacity and has been since they went with this the throwback weekends over the last several years. You know, they have sold, you know, there's not hardly many empty seats you can spot from TV. And a couple of races in that period have been sellouts. So yeah, you're right, Seth. They have done a good job and they promote it. You see something on my social media, I see something promoting Darlington every day and have for the last 6 or 8 weeks.
Same here. That's something that Chip Weil, who was the president at the time, he pitched, and he went personally to each and every single team.
He did.
Each and every stakeholder with a PowerPoint presentation showing this is how we plan on doing this. This is what we want to do. The first team to agree to do it was Stuart Haas Racing. The next team he went to was Hendrick Motorsports. And he said, by the way, Stuart Haas already agreed to this.
Yeah. Well, he came to RCR. I remember when he came to RCR. And Chip Weil and I go back a long way. Chip Weil was on the marketing staff at Bill Davis Racing many, many, many years ago. So, yeah, that's when he got his start right out of college. He got a job at Bill Davis and was working on the marketing staff there. So and PR staff. So, yeah, I've watched him climb the ranks, and he's done a good job. Did a great job at Darlington, and that kind of got him the gig at Daytona that he has now. So yeah, Chip understands it, knows what you've got to do. You've got to get out in front of things, and you've got to go that extra mile. You can't rest on your laurels. You can't. You got to get a lot of people involved in it, you know, and push it day in and day out, and it'll go. I just think that. So many things now, they just fall short supporting these things. And we can go back and look at California. I think California, IndyCar didn't do a good job out there marketing that. And you can go with the group that owns, you know, Auto Club Speedway and IndyCar together. You know, you got to get out in front of it. And Phoenix, too. Phoenix was a failure. Simply, I think, because it wasn't marketed right.
You know, sometimes I wonder when these IndyCar races fail, some of the ones that fail, and Pocono is going to be the next one to fail because it's pretty likely that when the schedule is released later in the week, it's going to be Richmond on, Pocono off. But these tracks that have failed have an existing NASCAR date, a cup date. Gateway is kind
not
of
all of them.
Not all of them. But Phoenix does for sure, you know, and California does for sure. Vegas does for sure. But Gateway is in a sense, they're auditioning for a cup date. They'd like to see that, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder if, like, once they get the cup date, will, like, IndyCar become, okay, well, we don't need you anymore because we saw that scenario play out of Kentucky.
I think if they keep the same group that really pushes, that's got, you know, obviously this group that is doing this thing at Gateway has a passion for IndyCar racing, and I think they'll continue to do it. NASCAR is not going to bring their premier series there. To Gateway. I don't see it.
Not until maybe 2021 or 2022.
Right.
Anyway.
I don't, you know, they could, I don't know. I know they'll always do their, the trucks and the Xfinity cars are always on the, always their first bargaining chip when they try to do something like this. But, you know, looking at Mid-Ohio, two things here. Mid-Ohio has great crowds for IndyCar, has had every year, haven't they, Frank?
Yes, they have, yeah. And then they have. They have an Xfinity weekend, you know, one weekend removed from the IndyCar race, and well, both, you know, of them draw decent crowds.
Right, and I tell you, the Xfinity race at Mid-Ohio is one of the best of the year. I always think it's terrific. That's a great course, Mid-Ohio is.
Road America as well.
Yeah, Road America. I like Mid-Ohio better than Road America. Road America is a little bit. too long-winded for me. You know, was it 14 turns, 4 miles? It's a good racetrack, don't get me wrong, and I enjoy watching it. But I just think Mid-Ohio is so much action. It's, you know, you got the tight corners. The cars seem to run on top of one another, and they don't, you know, they don't get that long-legged break like they do at Road America, you know, with the longer straightaways. They can get, you know, guys can get away. It seems like it's the Mid-Ohio can be pretty doggone good lap after lap, you know, when you get all the leaders up there battling. But you know, that goes to Mid-America's love for IndyCar. It seems like the Mid-America tracks have, and that's IndyCar's wheelhouse. Would you agree, Frank?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's why there are a lot of folks who are pushing for, why don't we make, you know, Gateway be the season finale. It's right there in the middle of IndyCar country. It's right there in the heartland of America. You know, it's not too many hours from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where the bulk of the rabid fans exist. So, you know, and why are we out here in wine country, you know, for a race that's drawing, you know, significantly fewer fans, mm-hmm. other than the fact that the corporate hospitality out there is pretty nice. But why not end the series at Gateway? End it on an oval. You know, we're losing ovals left and right, and here's an oval that puts on a great race and draws a good crowd.
Yeah.
So that's the thought there. So
one more thing before we get off IndyCar and this thing that we're on here now.
Oh, I'm not ready to get off IndyCar yet. I got a couple of things I want to go over, but you go right ahead.
I can't understand why Homestead went away. I always thought Homestead was a good track for IndyCar. I know I don't know what the problem was there. You would think that when you talk Homestead, you get down in the Miami area. You think since IndyCar has a more of an international flavor to it because of the drivers in Miami being more an international type city, that you would think that the two together would spell success.
You would, yeah. Again, that's one that baffles me. Why are we not in, you know, in the Miami area? You know, the St. Petersburg race draws quite well, but that's hours from Miami. So, mm-hmm. and they used to put on a good show at Homestead. Even, you know, before and after they reconfigured the track. So, but I want to
be terrific now.
Oh, it certainly would, yeah. But I want to get back to the Gateway race for a second and just throw this odd bit of information out. So, Scott Dixon had some problems in the race. Scott Dixon, who was the get home for the championship, but he had a piece of debris pierce his radiator, and they determined that this piece of debris was left over from a NASCAR K&N car whose engine had blown. And I'm thinking, my gosh, have we not cleaned the track that well between, you know, the warm-up act and the headliner?
If I may.
You go right ahead, because I know you probably know more than me.
There was a NASCAR K&N race as part of the weekend.
Right, it was the day before.
No, it was the day of.
Okay, all right.
It actually had to get shortened time-wise and lap-wise because they're running up on the IndyCar race itself. So it first got shortened from 125 laps to 98 laps. There were two engine failures in the race, one on the 10th lap of the race and one on the 27th lap of the race. So they were fairly early in that race. So there's no reason why, whether it was NASCAR or IndyCar officials, should have missed something on the track, considering it was only a couple of hours before the race.
Exactly. And I don't know how big this piece of debris was. It could have been just a very small piece of
debris.
Could have been a ball. But either way, they somehow determined it was left over from a K&N engine explosion. So
yeah.
I don't know. That's neither here nor there, but it certainly put a damper on Scott Dixon's championship hopes. He tried to get back in the race, got back in for a while, but the radiator was just losing water at an alarming rate, so there was no way he could stay in. So,
speaking of that, though, they also had a problem prior to qualifying in the IndyCar race when one of the old Indy Roadsters that they had there, you know, doing parade laps around the track. I think they had
They had some vintage cars out there.
They had some vintage Indy cars there, and one of them oiled the track down prior to qualifying. And the first car that went out, I forget who it was. I watched
Connor Daly.
He kind of messed his lap up because he got down in the speedy dry and washed up the racetrack. But I just thought I'd add that in too.
Let's talk about Connor Daly for a moment, though. Here's a guy who's still hoping to find somebody to give him a full time home. He's picked up these couple of rides with Carlin to fill in for Max Chilton on the ovals, which is good for him, good experience for him. So he started close to the back of the pack, finished in the top five, and he ran up front most of the night. Into Carlin's car, while his teammate Charlie Kimball was mired towards the back. So you got to wonder: are Carlin's problems the drivers, or is Carlin's problem the car? Because it seemed like Connor Daly did a really fine job making the best. You know, he was really competitive all night long in that car. That just saying, oh, the car is the problem.
He actually finished sixth because they threw the yellow for Newgarden's spin on the final corner.
Right. But he was up there in the top five all night. Yes. So, I mean, we'll see Connor again at Laguna in an Andretti car. So that'll be neat to see. So, at the end of the day, Richard, our friend Takuma Sato, has gone from chump to champ. Within the series of a week, he now has exactly three more wins than his teammate Graham Rahal does since joining the team. So, I mean, good stuff for Takuma. And we're going into Portland, where Takuma won last year. So, mm-hmm. Richard, I mean, what are your thoughts on Takuma going back-to-back? You feel like he can do it?
Well, I mean, he's one of those guys that, unfortunately, consistency isn't his strong point. But given the, you know, as you saw earlier in the year, was it Barber this year where he dominated?
Mm-hmm. He won at Alabama, and he dominated at Texas until he had the issue in the pits where he came in too hot and hit the crew member.
Brain fade,
again,
typical Takuma, unfortunately. But you know, he's a guy that, given any, I mean, if he could string half a dozen races together in a year on that sort of pumps, he could be a championship contender. I don't think there's any question about that. But there's no reason he can't go back to back. I thought he, you know. It was great, you know. You could argue he probably didn't deserve to win, at Gateway because he wasn't. He had a quick, but wasn't the quickest. He got a little bit of luck with the flow of the cautions there. But you know, you got to get. I think he deserved it in a way after all the just complete disgraceful behaviour by the pundits and the media from the Pocono event. So you know, good for him. Glad to see he bounced back and. He's a pretty tough character, and he's going to take it all on his chin. And, it was really, really good to see him get that win. Very pleased.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people in the media wanted his head served up on a platter after Pocono, and I thought it was ridiculous. I thought some of the comments that were made even during the broadcast of Pocono were kind of uncalled for. It's not those guys' jobs to be stewards. You know, call the race, say what you think, but leave the – you know, leave all the other stuff out of it. Just do the black and white portion of it, and you'll be fine. But I think that was Takuma's fifth career IndyCar win. Am I correct on that, Frank?
Yes, sir. He won at one for AJ Foyt, Long Beach in 2013. Won the Indy 500 for Andretti. Now he has three wins with Rahal.
So good for him, and you know he's a solid veteran performer, and that's that's what you can say. And I mean that's pretty. He represents himself well week in and week out.
And speaking of veteran performers, we had one of the oldest podiums At Gateway that we've seen in a while between, you know, Takuma being 42, Tony Khan pushing 44, and Ed Carpenter, who's 39, all on the podium. So, you know, hats off to the old guys, you know. So, you know, I mean, you know, your Alexander Rossi's and Santino Ferrucci's and Joseph Newgarden's have their day, but sometimes the old guys do too. So,
you know, Khan was quick in practice.
Canon was quick in practice, yeah. What were you saying, Richard?
I've still got a chance then. If all those guys are older than me, so I can still, you know, I've still got a time.
Sure, no? Yeah. It's fun to dream, yeah. So yeah. we're off to Portland. We're off to Portland next week, you know, and before we have a little break before the season ends. So a lot at stake at Portland, you know. The championship battle is tight. I mean, Joseph has got a little breathing room, but not much. He's got Simon breathing up his neck. Rossi is fired up and ready to go at it. So, Seth, who do you like for a winner at Portland?
Honestly, with the way things are going, it's basically coming up one of several drivers. So I'll just go with Simon Pagenaud.
Okay, and Gray, what do you think?
Rossi's got to rebound. He's got to keep his championship hopes alive, and I think he knows it. His team knows it. I think they're going to go in. They've been disappointed the last few weeks. Got taken out early at Pocono. Didn't like the result at Gateway, so I think they're going in on a mission this week.
All right. Now, Richard, what do you think?
Did Gray just call Ross Dixon there?
No, Greg called Rossi.
Okay, I'll call Dixon then.
Might as well call Dixon. Yeah, that's another guy in a mission there who didn't like the result out of Gateway. Me, I'm going to say somebody kind of not in the championship fight is going to come to the front and win this thing while the other guys are being a bit more conservative. I'm going to say Ryan Hunter-Reay takes a win at Portland, his first win of the year. So that being said, before we move on to talking about the road course race for NASCAR, I do want to mention that Jesse Combs, who is the holder of the land speed record for a female, lost her life trying to break her own record out in the desert in Oregon. Now, you know, for you folks that don't watch racing a lot, you may remember Jesse from her appearances on the Mythbusters television show. She was on there, but, you know, not a lot of details coming out there other than that she was the lone fatality in there. But she's running this land speed car that is made largely from an airplane fuselage, you know, to tackle this land speed record. So very unfortunate that she lost her life in her quest to break her own record, which I believe was 398 miles an hour overall with a top speed through at 440 miles an hour. So that's incredible speeds, but the racing world will miss you, Jesse Combs, and our thoughts are with your friends, your family, and those that knew you well. Now moving on to Road America, let's talk about Christopher Bell taking a nice road course win. Gray, Seth, what do you guys want to jump in on this?
Well, Christopher Bell can no longer say that it's not good at road courses. That was his line of basically attack prior to the weekend, that he's not good on road courses. He's finished second, and first on road courses this year. I think he's gotten better at them than he's willing to
I was going to say, I think he's selling you a line of goods.
Yeah, but he and his teammate Max DiBenedetto and AJ Allmendinger, they dominated the day. Came down to a late race restart. AJ Allmendinger, on the restart, he went to shift from second to third, and the car caught neutral for some reason, spun the tires. He ended up getting spun by Noah Gregson, then trying to work his way back through the field behind Austin Cindric, got turned around, ended up in an accident with NASCAR Euro Series driver Loris Hazemans and a few others. DiBenedetto had been up front prior to that final caution. A couple cautions earlier, he was in the lead came on the pit road, just like Jack Hawksworth in that 18 Gibbs car at Mid-Ohio. Pit crew let him down. He went from first down to about eighth or ninth, had to work his way back up. Final corner, DiBando, as he called it, made a rookie mistake, spun off track and into the tire barrier.
All right, so good day for Christian Bell. How many races are we off for Xfinity to be in their playoffs?
I believe we are 3 or 4 away now.
Right, and the trucks are in their playoffs now, right? The,
correct.
The Ray race at Canadian. The race at Canadian Tire Park was the first race second. In the playoffs. Second, okay, all right. So, so let's talk about the trucks out up there in Canada, because that's always an entertaining race, especially you know when a couple guys get in a fist fight at the end. Although we didn't have that level of drama this week, we did have a good race.
It was a good race. Brett Moffitt absolutely dominated the weekend. He was fastest in practice, qualifying on the pole, led 44 of the 64 laps on his way to victory. No one could touch him. Alex Taglioni got his best finish in the truck series, second in the Kyle Busch Motorsports 51. His two teammates, Harrison Burton and Todd Gilliland, both had engine troubles. Although I do want to knock the Fox telecast, they, for whatever reason, left a battle between five of the playoff drivers on the final lap to follow Brett Moffitt around the entire track, who had a, let's see, 5.5 second lead at the time, and missed Stuart Friesen running out of gas, one of the playoff drivers, as well as an off-track excursion for Tyler Ankrum, one of the playoff drivers.
Ouch, yeah. So, I mean, sometimes it's hard to for these TV guys to know where to put a camera to, but if you got a guy 5 seconds ahead with nothing going on and a battle in the mid-pack, put the camera on. Put the camera on that.
You had five playoff drivers all under a blanket, essentially. That's how close they were together. You could see when they were following Moffitt down the Mario Andretti straightaway. You could see Austin Hill, Johnny Sauter, Stuart Friesen, and Ross Chastain all go into and out of turn five together, and they didn't switch to him.
What are you gonna do, Seth? I'm gonna go ahead and fill out your application for Fox Sports and put it in with my recommendation. Say, hey, hire this guy. So now, Gray or Rich, you guys get a chance to watch any of these road course races from the NASCAR Junior Series this week?
I watched some of the Xfinity.
Yeah, I saw some of the Xfinity racing. It was good racing. Matt DiBenedetto, goodness me, any team manager worth a salt is going to turn around and tell him he's fired now, aren't they? Because he seems to perform pretty damn well when he's under the under scrutiny there, doesn't he? That was very impressive by him again.
Now let's talk about Matt for a second, because here's a guy who's lost his ride for next year in the Cup Series. I mean, is there anybody interested in him? Because you got to figure the guy is putting together some really good results, and it'd be a shame for him to be on the outside looking in. Are there any hot prospects for him?
Unfortunately, right now it doesn't look like it. Go Fast Racing, his old home, for all intents and purposes, from what looks like, is entering into an alliance with Stuart Haas Racing that would bounce Corey LaJoie from that car. The only car that currently is competitive in any way, shape, or form that has an opening is at Front Row Motorsports, where David Reagan is retiring, and they apparently are talking to Corey. I know there's at least one or two Xfinity teams that are expressing interest in Matt DiBenedetto. He was actually asked about even going down to run for Gibbs full-time next year, and he said that Gibbs is already filled up for next year, although they haven't announced who's going to be in some of their cars, especially for Xfinity. and that the KBM trucks are already filled next year.
Poor guy, man. Here's a guy that can drive well and can't get a break. But, I mean, we see this in many forms of racing where you got a guy who's just good. He just doesn't either have the backers, the sponsors, or he just doesn't have the connections. But at the same time, here's a guy who's putting together decent results week after week after week. And you gotta wonder, do you want a flash in the pan guy who's going to win one week and be last the next? Or here's a guy who's consistently delivering decent results.
Unfortunately, it's very much sponsor-driven.
Sure it is, yeah.
For example, the driver I was talking about in the Xfinity Series, Loris Haizemans, who comes from NASCAR Euro, he got his ride as a result of one of his friends from ARCA way back when, and his sponsors were a bunch of basically his Dutch fan clubs that helped pay for the travel expenses for him to get there.
I mean, it is what it is. The teams need the money, right, Gray?
Yeah, it's this. Unfortunately, that's the way the sport's driven today, and we see that we see that all across all forms of motorsports. You know, you got to bring money to the table to be able to get the ride. Sometimes talent is not enough, and it's kind of a trend that we've been in, for a good while. And I think someone will pick him up. I mean, someone's going to get injured along the way. You hate to say that, hate to see it, but he'll step in somewhere. He'll get his shot. It's just going to it's kind of late in the year to be negotiating for rides for next year. A lot of that stuff's already in the works and headed toward, those deals are headed toward signings and things like that this time of year. So, yeah. He'll get his shot. He'll do some fill-in duty. It's up to him. He just has got to, step in and perform each opportunity he gets.
Yeah, that's the best thing he put in his resume. So Seth, are there any guys in the Cup Series who may be on the chopping block for next year? Anybody who's in danger of saying, okay, your services are no longer needed? Or is everything pretty – I mean, the silly season in Cup has been pretty quiet this year compared to past years.
The only one that has spoken publicly is Daniel Hemric. He said that his situation is iffy for next year. That was at Bristol. There are reasons for that I can't about here. But otherwise, there are not many drivers that are on any sort of chopping block, at least publicly. There are some that, if you look at the results, if you look at where the team has been versus where they are this year, you can kind of figure out maybe people. Well, I mean, there's whispers already about Jimmy Johnson, but there's been whispers about him possibly stepping away for the past 3 years. Then you have someone like Daniel Suarez that all of his teammates, are, for the most part, are running very, very well. And he's had good moments and he's had not so good moments. So you really have to almost like pick and choose looking through the running order to see who should be safe and who is in trouble.
Okay. And speaking of guys that are in trouble, let's tackle this Tyler Dibble story, okay?
Okay.
So, Seth, I'm just going to let you tell it start to, beginning to end, because this guy has been in and out of trouble, and I think at the end of the day, he's not as bad a guy as he was initially made out to be, but I'm just going to let you, navigate the minefield.
Well, it goes back to March of this year, Martinsville, Virginia. He was pulled over for reckless driving. He pled that down to improper driving. I believe that's just probation. was the only incident until he decided to go after Ben Rhodes post-race at Eldora while on the cooldown lap. So that was his second strike. Then this past weekend, driving in his hometown in, I think it's Overkill, New York, or it's in New York. He was pulled over by the state police for going in excess of 80 miles per hour in a 65 mile per hour zone. He and his passenger were asked if they had been taking any drugs, which they both denied. He was asked if the troopers could search his vehicle, which, because he didn't believe he had anything, he gave them consent. They found a book bag in the trunk with a pill bottle for Adderall that was not prescribed to him and not prescribed to the passenger. Therefore, they had to charge him with possession, which he notified NASCAR and his team as soon as he could. It ended up being a couple hours later because he had to go down to the station, do a drug test, etc. And because of that, NASCAR had to penalize him for essentially violating the code of conduct. Turns out one of his friends, whose book bag it was and whose prescription it was, has claimed the bag, so the charges have been dropped, although they still have yet to be officially dropped in court. So until they're dropped in court, he is still on NASCAR suspension.
Right, but he's not being forced to the road to recovery because he took another voluntary drug test and
He passed the random one at Bristol, which was the week prior. He passed the one at the police station, and then he took one when he got back to North Carolina, and he passed that one.
Okay, so
he's actually passed three drug tests.
Yeah, so we can assume he's not using. Correct. Well, we can do better than assume. We can be you know, fairly confident he's not using. And I want to back up to the New York. The initial report said he was transporting stuff over the Canadian border.
Is that
just a misnomer that's not true, or
he was on the way to the border to go up to the track in Bowmanville, Ontario? So it was taken out of context because he didn't know he had it. So he can't exactly be transporting it the way it was described he was transporting it.
Yeah, because the initial reports that came out sounded like, you know, oh my God, here's a guy smuggling drugs over the border. And it turns out it's nothing like that.
Not at all. And he did actually plead guilty for the traffic violation, which it's New York Traffic Law 1128A. I'm not going to read the entire law. Essentially, improper driving. And instead of it being a speeding penalty, it's a speeding ticket, I should say. It's essentially a lane change violation that he is being essentially charged with now.
Okay, so he's a race car driver and he drives fast in the interstate, change lanes. I mean, like, Richard Grace, how many times do you go 85 miles an hour on the interstate when it's speed limit 65? Plenty. So I never do that. Okay, well, yeah. You British people do nothing wrong. So Dipple is not reinstated yet.
But
do we feel that is forthcoming?
Honestly, it is more likely forthcoming. It's just a matter of time. This reminds me a lot of Kurt Busch in 2015. When he was initially charged with domestic violence against his then-girlfriend or ex-girlfriend, Patricia Driscoll. And he was the charges were dropped, but he had to, and it was proven that he didn't do it, or didn't do exactly what she described anyway. But He had to wait, and NASCAR had to wait until charges were dropped 3 weeks later for him to be reinstated.
Right. They had to make sure the legal process ran its course. And I understand that. So, well, I mean, hopefully Dibble can get back in a car and his reputation isn't too awful tarnished.
For the Truck Series, their next race is until Las Vegas, and that's in 2 weeks. So, depending on how fast New York law moves, he might be reinstated in time for the race. Otherwise, Young's Motorsports might have another driver in the truck. Up in Canada, they elected to put DJ Kennington in the truck.
Okay, well, we'll just have to see how that all plays out for him. So, now, where's the Cup Series off to next?
Darlington.
Now, Gray, that's your favorite track on the schedule. And I don't know that. I know you'll be there. You'll be there in your retro gear. So, Gray, give us a quick preview of Darlington, what we might expect to see. We got a couple of guys right on the bubble hoping to maybe sneak a win in and get in there. So, you know, with the new package and your tires and everything, what kind of race might we expect to see at Darlington this week?
Well, we'll see the typical Darlington there, where tires will be. Tires will mean a lot. Tire degradation is the name of the game there at Darlington. Being able to manage your tires, the fall off is so significant because of the tire wear is pretty accelerated at that track, simply because of the old sandy rough surface that the guys run on. And I think too, Darlington is a track where the veterans will come to the forefront. A lot of places, in a lot of races, that's what you'll see. There's a few surprises over the years at Darlington, but most of the time, you'll see guys like Truex will be strong, Harvick will be strong there, Denny Hamlin be strong, Kyle Busch, and the race will be has sort of an ebb and flow. You'll see guys get out front, and then the field, they'll kind of accordion back to the rest of the field. You'll see guys work on their cars throughout the night, and sometimes guys that don't run well at the beginning of the race will emerge at the halfway point and run strong the rest of the way. It's tough to pick, you know, one guy there. I do think, Truex has been really strong there the last several years. I think he'll be tough to beat there. Kyle Busch, again, Harvick usually runs good there. That four car seems to come good. But I'm looking forward to it. It's always a good show. Good, like we talked about earlier, the fans really show up for that race. It'll be a good crowd there. Hopefully, there's some storms brewing out in the Atlantic, and hopefully they'll stay away and let us get that race in. I think, and Seth can back me up on this, but I think the Southern 500 has never been rained out. It's had some rain delays and been rain shortened a time or two during its long run, but I don't ever remember a full rain out and having to come back another day for the Southern 500. But this will be my 50th consecutive Southern 500. All right,
and Gray, who are you picking?
I'm gonna go with Truex. I think he'll be tough to beat there.
Outstanding pick. Now, Seth, to you.
Well, I'm gonna go with Joey Logano, and if you haven't seen his throwback unveiling, his wife wears the fire suit in the family. If you get the reference, yep. He's throwing back to Kevin Harvick's Daytona 500 winning car. And he very famously said after an altercation at Pocono with Harvick that Kevin's wife, Delana, wears the fire suit in the family.
Oh, that's funny. I did not see that, but that is hilarious. So, all right, so Joey Logano for you. Richard, what are your thoughts on Darlington? Who would you like to see win, or who are you going to pick?
Who are we going to pick for Darlington? Chase Elliott.
Okay, and I'm going to go with Brad Keselowski. He's won at Darlington in the last decade, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and he's running another Rusty Wallace-era Miller Genuine Draft livery, that those cars were absolutely beautiful. The black and gold Miller Genuine Draft cars, and just that's going to look phenomenal on the track. So off to Darlington now, Richard. Formula One is gearing up to get going again, and there are a lot of rumors.
There are
a lot of rumors surrounding young Mr. Ocon, and I've seen rumors putting him in every car on the grid, from the Mercedes to the Renault to the Haas. So tell me what you know.
So the biggest clue that something's going on is there was a French auto magazine published a front page of stating that Ocon is going to be replacing Nico Hülkenberg at Renault. And then Hülkenberg retweeted the photograph with the caption, we're going to be in for an interesting Thursday, or something along those lines. So, who knows what's going to happen? Have they decided to keep Valtteri on and loan him out? Now, I believe that if Ocon does go to Renault, then he will sever the ties with the Mercedes stable. And that's something that Toto Wolff in the past has said. He said that, Esteban's future is more important than Mercedes keeping a stable of drivers. I wonder if that's a bit of a dig at Red Bull there. But, you could see him go there and move away. Now, obviously, if a team like Mercedes came calling, unless Renault are being extremely competitive, it would be a no-brainer for him to jump ship and go back to Mercedes. Or they may be looking at some of the other drivers in their stables. I know that some of the stuff that some of the other young Mercedes drivers have been doing has been very impressive. So, there may be Mercedes sort of spreading them out and seeing what happens, really.
Yeah, so, there's a lot of speculation here, and one of the one post I saw Daniel Ricciardo is going to have a new teammate next year. So I guess, whether that's Esteban Ocon or no, or what's going to happen next Thursday or this coming Thursday.
Tomorrow,
yesterday. Yeah, after we tape our show and it airs after the announcement.
Yeah.
A lot of the smart money is putting Hülkenberg in the Haas car. Grosjean looking for work. Are you hearing anything on that front, or?
It makes sense. I don't think there's anything, if that all played out, I don't think anybody would be too surprised, would they? I'd go with that, Makes sense. I think Haas need to change something up, both technically and within the driver lineup. Not that either of the drivers have done a particularly bad job, I don't think. But they're just not quite getting there, are they? I don't think they're just not quite getting the job done.
Anybody else that we consider safe that might be a surprise
So who do we think is at risk? We think, obviously, I would say Kubica's at risk.
Kubica's definitely at risk, yeah. We think both Haas drivers are at risk.
Both Haas drivers potentially at risk. I think both Perez and Stroll have long-term contracts there. I think that who knows what's going on in the Red Bull merry-go-round of drivers. Obviously, Verstappen's safe, and it does leave the other seat open. Will you see Gasly drop back into a Toro Rosso for next year? I don't know who. You see, they ditched Ticktum off their young driver list, and I think it'd be too soon for the guy that was doing some of the, the guy who was doing some of the IndyCar races now over in Super Formula.
Pato O'Ward.
Yeah, Pato O'Ward, yeah. It's too soon for him to step up to Toro Rosso. So you wonder, is Gasly going to be relegated back to Toro Rosso for next season? And who is his teammate be? Would it be Kvyat or Albon? I think if Kvyat doesn't get promoted to Red Bull full-time again, you have to question keeping him at Toro Rosso for another year. Obviously, the reason they brought him back into Toro Rosso was to see if he could cut it with Red Bull again. So to put Albon in the Red Bull, that's basically Albon's got a 6-month job interview, and he's going up against what they know in Kvyat. Kvyat's a known quantity, and they can compare the two. So I think on the Ferrari side, both guys are safe. Mercedes side, obviously Bottas is unsafe, but who knows what's happening there. There's a few changes. I think Mercedes, I know McLaren, both drivers are signed in for next year. I think they've both done a fantastic job. So there's a few little movements, but I don't think there's going to be anything. I expect that Kubica, if he's replaced, he could be replaced with Latifi, the current, I think he's still the points leader in the Formula 2 Championship, who's put on the Williams sort of young driver plan or whatever you want to call it. Nothing major going on, I don't think. I don't think there's going to be any surprises like there was with Ricciardo last year.
Okay, good stuff. So when are we racing now? We're racing this coming weekend?
This weekend in Spa-Francorchamps, yeah.
That's one of my favorite racetracks. Oh. So who do you like for Spa?
Leclerc.
And Gray, who do you like for Spa?
Oh, let's see here. Coming out of the break, I'm going to say Hamilton.
All right, good stuff, yes. And Seth, what do you think?
For Spa, let's see if Vettel can get out of his funk.
All right, so that leaves me Verstappen. And, of course, Spa is always subject to questionable weather. You know, and sometimes it rains on half the track and not the other half, and so it can produce an exciting race. And so we'll just have to see how all that works out. But we've got about 5 minutes left, guys. So are there any topics out there, Daniel, we haven't touched on that anybody wants to speak about?
Matt Borland, the crew chief for Ty Dillon, was suspended for violating the substance abuse policy.
And what substance did they say what substance it was? I heard it was diet coffee, right?
Which is that's crazy. What he blamed. It is some sort of supplement that has an amphetamine in it. It's the same substance that Bailey Curry was suspended for at Bristol. Justin Alexander will serve as interim crew chief for Ty Dillon this weekend.
So let me ask you this, okay? So this is, again, something that's coming off of a supplement, right? And you and I both know that there are all these little shops everywhere, you know, homeopathic health or this or new health, what, where they sell these supplements. Is this just a matter of guys not doing their research to realize that this whatever is in this supplement is actually a prohibited substance under their... You know, under their employer, you know, their employer's rules?
I would say that's more than likely correct. It's either that or they just don't realize it's on the banned substance list.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, yeah. So, you know, because you get these...
Also...
You get these guys to give you a sale. You go to the gym and somebody give you a sales pitch. Oh, yeah, try this, and it's 100% natural, and it's homeopathic, and it's this. But at the same time, these things are not regulated by the FDA either, so you don't always know what you're getting in that. So it seems to me like your smart bet would be to say, no, let me just get some aspirin because I know that's good.
Also, this just came across social media. Tyler Dipple has officially been reinstated.
You heard it here first, folks. Breaking news.
Breaking news, yep. Well, that's as we suspected, so.
I recorded 2 days ago.
All right, so Gray, any parting words for the night?
No, not really. Just hope to see a good race at Darlington this weekend and enjoy it. Number 50. Hopefully get to start another streak. Make it 51.
Do you get to wave the green flag then or something, Gray?
Huh?
Do you get to wave the green flag They must be doing something for you.
Yeah, they need to make me the Grand Marshal, I guess. Maybe next year.
I would vote for that, yeah. So, Gray, hope you have the best time in the world at Darlington.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Seth, Richard, thank you so much tonight. And Gray, great show tonight. I want to thank Hoobazoo Radio Network. I want to thank iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and I want to thank all you folks that listen to us week in and week out. This is Drafting the Circuits. My name is Frank Santoroski. Good night.
WHOOBAZOO.com.
Enter website.